You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Beyond the Game. My name is Gregan, and today I'm chatting with Charlie Roxburgh.
So I used to work at a bar, and then I met all the Sidemen boys from there. That's pretty much where I used to do audio engineering at uni. So my background is music. It's where I'm kind of returning back to now.
The next side of it I want to go down is you've worked with so many different people, like I mentioned at the start. So what's the weirdest content you've been a part of? I can see your little smile now. You're thinking through all the different content you've done.
I'm just trying to think how PG it could be or not.
I mean, this podcast doesn't have to be PG.
Okay. It's also more about like, who's watching. filming with Johnny Sins was an experience.
So the things you do where you're willing to give without thinking, then sometimes you struggle to take. Is that something you felt like maybe you need to learn how to receive?
I've earned a lot of money in a month before. I've earned nothing in a month before too. I understand that as long as I can pay my bills, as long as I can afford a lifestyle which I want to do, I don't care about how much money I have. I'm blessed, I'm lucky, and it's a privilege that I have a family home in London, that when the day comes, when my parents pass, I will have a house. I'm never going to be stressed in this life, and it's people put too much pressure on themselves to be like, God, I've got to save, I've got to do this, I've got to do this. You're constraining yourself.
Make sure to follow for future episodes and let us know who you want to hear from next. I hope you enjoy this conversation as we get to know Charlie beyond the game. We're ready. Charlie.
Eventually, yeah.
Charlie, how you doing?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
A lot of people won't know your influence on this podcast because you're very much a behind the scenes kind of guy. You help out a lot of people behind the scenes, which kind of brings me on to what you do. You're a content producer. I don't know if you want to describe that in a better term, because content producer, anyone could say they're a content producer.
Yeah.
But you do a lot behind the scenes to make some of the best content in YouTube. I mean, for orgs, esports orgs, for companies, you do all sorts of stuff.
It's a good question if you want me to explain. I don't actually know what I do most of the time. I kind of go from space to space, just vibes and inshallah. I just wake up and I'm like, okay, this thing comes. A lot of the stuff comes to me. Mm-hmm. So I guess a content production is kind of, I guess, a good way to describe it. But if someone just says, what do? I just say videography because it's quite simple. But obviously there's more stuff that goes into what I do. Some stuff is paid, some stuff is not, but it's just more of like, I love content and I love like producing and helping content. So even if it's something like, for example, like with your stuff and you ask me to help you with a few things here, I walk into your place and then the set's here. It's fulfilling. You'll be like, okay, well, I didn't do it, but I helped you make the link to make that happen. And now you're creating content, which I've helped you to do, which is, I don't have to go out into the public and be like, I did that or anything, or I had influence on that. I just see it and be like, that's nice. It's like a little thumbprint on the industry. And I see that everywhere because I've seen like the stuff which I do and I'm like, oh, that's quite, it's nice.
Yeah, I feel that. There's a lot of people I've helped get in the esports industry, and seeing them succeed after that first connection you make for them is always quite exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a post recently of a friend of mine. I was like, if you're not hiring this guy, then you're doing something wrong. And I was like, I was there like 4 years ago getting him some of his early gigs, and now he's like one of the best in the industry for what he does. That's Aaron Gill, by the way. Anyone who knows him, he's a producer in esports.
Shout out Aaron Gill.
He was in my Minecraft community back in the day. It's things like that where you see nice. Those people go on to do amazing things. And for you, you've worked with a whole variety of people. I think most notably it's probably with Ethan, right? Mm. And that was where you started off with content production, is it?
Yeah, actually. So I used to work at a bar and then I met all the Sidemen boys from there. And then I guess that's pretty much where I used to do audio engineering at uni. So my background is music. That's where I'm kind of returning back to now. But the whole journey that I went from was met Ethan used to stand at the corner of a bar drinking a JD and Coke, speaking to no one. I used to serve everyone their drinks. Cal Freezy came in. I used to get his drinks and stuff ready. And then Freezy and I used to say, oh, well, we both like playing football. I was 18 at the time, so this is literally 8 years ago now. And I was like, well, why don't we just play football together sometime? So I booked a Shoreditch Power League, and we rocked up, started playing together. Then we moved it over to Fairlop because it was cheaper. It was literally half the price to play football, and the pitches were bigger as well. So I was like, oh, we'll just roll over, we'll play a bit. And then Freezy said, you should meet this guy, Ethan. I said, I've seen him before a few times. Doesn't say much at the bar, but he's a West Ham fan as well, because I know you're a West Ham fan. I was like, yeah. So I spoke to Ethan briefly. We followed each other, started talking here and there, just small stuff. And then Ethan then hit me up one time and said, I've got tickets to the last game at the Berlin, the West Ham game. And we'd been speaking for quite a while at that point. And then we started going to the West Ham games together. And then I guess to cut a long story short, Ethan went away on a holiday. And I said, I'll edit a video for you. I didn't ask to be paid or anything. I just like, well, I've got spare time, so I'll do it. Because I did audio engineering. It's a DAW. It's like audio software. It's very transferable over to Premiere. So I cracked a version of Premiere because I was a broke uni student. And then edited the video, and the people really liked it. So Ethan said, do you want to do that? Do you want to just edit a couple more things here? I wasn't enjoying uni. And then when uni finished, Ethan was like, okay, well, would you like to come onto a Sidemen shoot? Con's not here. So I did, it was a punishment pool one. So it was like pool, what you play with, not actually a swimming pool. And then I filmed all of that. I had no experience, by the way, like at all. So I filmed all of that. It was like multi-camera angles. Then I edited it all, put that up. Con was like, that was really good. Ethan was just like, you've done some of the West Ham vlogs. He said, do you just want to do my content now? And I just literally just got thrown in the deep end from there. Con trained me pretty much. Everything I know about direction came from Con. So he gave me my first like big work opportunity working Sidemen stuff. And then everything that's happened from there is just kind of you meet one person, then the next, and then you kind of go from there. Yeah.
Yeah, it's always crazy when you hear these stories of, oh, how do I get into it? Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, you can't fake the natural meeting of people. You can try and put yourself out there, go along to events and mm-hmm. and all that kind of thing. But sometimes it is just luck. It's just fate. You kind of meet the right person at the right time. And mm-hmm. for you, meeting those guys in the bar has led you to where you are now. But when it comes to the other side of the learning and developing those skills, you now have the whole toolbox, right? Like you said, you started with audio, but is there any part of the production process that you particularly favor and any part of it that you really don't like doing?
Ooh. Yeah. I bloody hate editing. I'm not a bad editor. I'm a decent editor, but when I have the time, I'm quite meticulous in my stuff as well. Like small things really irk me out, especially audio. So if you're ever an editor that works with me and you don't crossfade your audio, I will bollock you and I'll be like, you need to sort this out ASAP. So one, my top editor that I work with, I've worked with two great editors in my time, one being Callum Andrew, who now Calix nabbed off me, which is brilliant. Thanks, mate. And then Theo, who's my current chief editor. So I have quite a few editors that work under me, but then Theo is my main one. And Theo works very hard, but Theo sits and does the editing process. And that's something where I've done it throughout the whole of lockdown before then. I have to be out there and doing things like making connections, pre-production, where I'm actively just being like, okay, the shoot needs to look like this, the content production needs to go this way. And then the actual videography and the filming, being on shoots, doing things, experiencing things, because I like seeing the content before it actually goes out too. But then the post-production side of it, I'll just let someone sweat in a room and do that, because you do that, I'll give you the briefs of what it needs to look like. You do it. I've done it. I've earned my stripes. I don't want to go back there. And then I'll manage the post-production process. I'll watch the edits, review them, go back, give them, you do them, come back to me from there. But please don't ever make me edit again.
I'm exactly the same. I hate editing. So I used to make my own YouTube videos, the whole process, you know, like everyone does when they first start out. Mm-hmm. And I would cut so many corners in editing. I would try and make sure I did stuff in one take as much as possible so I didn't have to edit. So I think that's what made me good at live content in esports, because I was mm-hmm. like, I do not want to edit anything. If I can do it without having to chop it up, that's brilliant. And then every content piece I've done since then, the first thing I look for is, let's see if I can find an editor. And as soon as I came back to doing YouTube for Rocket League, I was like, I need to find an editor. I can't do this unless I have someone doing this for me. I mean, this, we've got Joe who does the mm-hmm. editing for that. So, you know, like, I'm exactly the same as you. I could not edit. But what's your favorite bit then when you're doing a production piece? What's the bit you look forward to the most?
The shoot day.
Shoot day.
Oh, yeah. So I work in either by myself. I do a shoot either by myself or with the team. And I like the teams because my strong points come out when I'm in charge of people, like when I delegate, when I dump. No, I'm joking. That's like, I have weaknesses and strengths for stuff. Multitasking, if you ask me to multitask, like, it's a long day. But when I can step back away from the camera and I can oversee a project, the shoot will go smooth. If people are on job and I've got the right people on and we've got the right pre-production, it will go well. If anything does happen, I'm quick thinking on my feet when it comes to adapting on a shoot. And I've had quite a lot of shoots which have gone bad. Where it's required for me to think on the spot and try and work out how to sort things. Sometimes it's a bust. Sometimes your video's muddied. Sometimes a decision which you make makes the video. Sometimes a decision you make saves the video. And I thrive in the situation where I would have to ensure that if a pre-production wasn't done properly or if circumstances change, that you actually have to step in and be like, okay, well, this is the way we're going to go. YouTube is not TV. So it's very on the feet and you have to quickly think and go and move and adapt. And it's always about adaptation. So if you haven't got that attribute where you can turn a bit of content around very quickly on a tight deadline and also on a shoot day, then you haven't really got what it takes to be able to direct that content. And I think that's a skill which you're naturally like, that you naturally have, but can be trained, can be taught, because it's a thought process. And sometimes it comes more naturally to others and sometimes it don't. But the shoot days, they excite me. Mm-hmm. I enjoy them because it's never straightforward. It's, mm-hmm. You could turn up to just a baking shoot and something will happen, which isn't scripted. And I like seeing that you have an idea for a video, but the video will not be the way that you just plan it because you have so many variables. So your talent that you're in front of camera, they might do something. And if you're watching properly from behind the camera, you can stop something and ask them to continue to go into that. And then that could change the whole trajectory of the video. Something which happens there can help you title the video. Mm-hmm. So you're making your notes and be like, okay, well, this has happened in the video. Therefore, that's a clip and that can go to your short form content. Or that can actually direct the narrative towards clickbaiting the actual video, because you could have it like, oh, I'm doing a baking video. Or they've said something, bang, that actually then goes into your title and your thumbnail, and then your CTR goes up as a result, you know?
Yeah, I guess what you described there is that mindset, the creative thinking. A lot of people describe that as you've got to have a mindset for YouTube, don't they? Like, you've got to think of the title, you've got to think of the thumbnail, you've got to think of mm-hmm. how the content's going to make people want to keep watching it. And that's what Mr. Beast has been so vocal about, is his vision for content and how it makes people engaged. Mm-hmm. I guess you described some of the challenges of YouTube being quite fast paced. You got to turn things around quickly. You know, you do one shoot day, you got to get the video out in the next few days a lot of the time. What's the hardest turnaround you've had in terms of from the moment you had to start the content to we need this video out by 3 days time or whatever?
I did a documentary for Astrid Wett, and they wanted it out for the Monday after the fight. And I said, that's absolutely impossible because the internet in Telford is like a third world country. It was absolutely, they do not have electricity there apparently. But that went out a week later and that was like a whole week of filming. And I wanted to have like 2 months of filming at least, but I'd only just started working with her. So to turn around a documentary of that quality in the time which we did, I was quite proud of that. It was my first like doc series which I did, and with the limited time and the amount of hours that were put into it, that was tough. Also for Astrid, we did 4 videos in 4 days as like an advent calendar in the lead up to her fight against AJ Bunker. So we had 1 week of filming the week before, and then we had to turn around 4 videos on the main channel for the next week. That was stress. And that was like a prime example of don't ever make me edit, because that editing process, we have another guy called Ronaldo, who's on the editing team. Very fitting name, because he absolutely bodied it. Him and Theo were working hours and hours to make sure that we got that content done. And the videos were like a resounding success. I'm trying to think of any other ones which are like on like a short deadline. Ethan would stick me up with just like, oh, I've edited this. This needs to be up in a couple of days. And I'm like, brother, come on. Okay, fine. Sure, it's a brand deal. We're going to get it done. But I guess it's just part and parcel of the job. Unfortunately, with like YouTube, I've only received my first contract, and that's with Astrid. A lot of it's freelance. It's very like off the books, kind of like you can be as professional or unprofessional as you want, which is a blessing and a curse in the industry. So to be honest with you, when it comes to deliverables, if your client's saying I'll pay you 50 quid or 100 or 1 grand, whatever it's going to be, you need to just match their expectations and their deliverables, because it's not contracted, usually speaking. They just be like, okay, well, if you don't do it, you don't get paid, you know. And legally, you're not going to go to small claims court and have a... That's a completely different topic. Like, you're not going to do it, are you?
You're just going to see an email, it says something, you have to do it, otherwise it's going to get a bit complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess the next side of it I want to go down is you've worked with so many different people, like I mentioned at the start. Mm-hmm. You started working a bit with esports orgs. You mentioned the boxing stuff. Mm-hmm. You worked with OnlyFans models for a bit. you've worked with YouTubers. What's the weirdest bit of content you've filmed? Because this podcast, this is you quite professional. You know, you're mm-hmm. being quite professional. A lot of people who know you behind the scenes, you're quite a cheeky guy. I can imagine you pushing the weird content even weirder, if that was the aim of it. So what's the weirdest content you've been a part of? I can see your little smile now. You're thinking through all the different content you've done.
I'm just trying to think how PG it can be or not.
I mean, this podcast would have to be PG.
Okay. It's also more about like, who's watching. filming with Johnny Sins was an experience.
So Johnny Sins being the porn star.
Yes. And the Elbrook collab that they did for OnlyFans. And I filmed that. And being in a room with that was the strangest thing. Like,
when you say... collab, was this
OnlyFans collaboration? They were having sex. That was probably the weirdest. I don't know if it's the avenue you're going down, but I'm trying to think, like, on a PG side, it's always just strange. There'll be many Sidemen shoots where I'm just like, this is very bizarre. E-boy shoot, like I did an e-boy shoot when they were doing their content. So that's Will and E, Memeless, James Marriott, I'm Alex. So they pulled me on to do their content for the short period of time when they actually did do their things. And we were in a shoot once, and it was so hot. It was ridiculous. Like, I don't know what was going on. They booked a studio and I had the camera set up and everything. I just had to go down in my pants. So I was just sat there. I was directing the content just behind the camera, just stood in my pants. Like, Will looked over and he was like, okay, Charlie's naked. I was just like, well, I am, because I'm boiling. Like, I need to work. And then actual content-wise, I'm trying to think, mate. I'm just going to tell you the Johnny Sins one. It was just really bizarre. I rocked up, did a day of shooting with Johnny and Elle. And this was in Vegas, January last year. So just over a year ago now. And they... did a day of filming TikToks. So we filmed TikToks. They banged. They did really well. Then we did a YouTube video. It's like a set or shot it. And then we filmed the adult content where I set up 2 static cams, set up the lighting, and then I went handheld on one. And
I thought you were going to say you set it all up and then walked out the room and let them go. But then you're like, nope, got a handheld out.
I was up in those. Yes, that was... So adult content, it's like another thing. Like, I'm a very comfortable human. Nothing really makes me uncomfortable. My boundaries are pretty just non-existent. But for that content, I was like, how has my life put me here where I'm filming my client getting pumped out by Johnny Sins? I don't know what's going on. Like, I was like, what has happened? I filmed it. I was like, all right, great. Put it on a hard drive, put it on a Dropbox, got it sent over to the editor. I don't need to see it when it's done. Just, you do you. That's your thing.
And I was not like, checking the audio on that one.
No, but that's like another thing as well. Like people just like, oh, well, you're not like really like turned on. But I was like, no, because I'm not getting involved. It's got nothing to do with me. So like, I'm just filming it. I was like, it was really strange. I made direct eye contact with her when she had a sausage in her gob. And I have like the exact image. I was on the end of the bed and then it was there. And I literally looked up from the camera. We looked dead in the eyes. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to carry on. Also, ran out of underwear as well. I was out in America for 3 weeks. So my member was just free flowing in jeans. I was like, this is the worst. Didn't excite me. Don't get me wrong. I wasn't in that. But I was like, there's so many places where I'd like to be proud of my work. And in regards to adult content, it was a well-shot video. But no one's watching that to be like, that is great videography, that. That looks really good. So there's nothing I could actually sit there and be like, I'm really proud of that bit of work. Yeah. Just like, I did that. I did two adult bits of content when I was out there. And I've had OnlyFans girls message me since being like, would you like to come and do this? And I'm like, no, not really. Because I'm working on my website now. And yes, I can say that I've done work with Mia Malkova and I've done work with Johnny Sins, but it's because if I put on a website, it's because I've done YouTube content. I'm not going to put adult content on my actual website as a portfolio piece. But I've done loads of different like types of work. It's very eclectic, which also is kind of like a blessing for that because I get used to being put in different areas. I know that if you say to me for any kind of shoot, any bit of content, okay, Char, we have a shoot coming up next week, whatever. As long as like a bit of pre-production's done, you could throw me in anywhere and I can get a content done for you, which is, some people can't do that. If you're half good at what you do, you should be able to, but being put in different areas is there. But that's a very long-winded way of saying what was a weird experience.
No. I mean, I knew you were going to have a great answer for that because you have done so many different things. And I feel like you're one of those people who's willing to try lots of different ideas as well. And that's how you sort of ended up in those different scenarios, is you're like, yeah, I'll give it a go. And then now you're like, actually, rather not do adult content. At least I've got it done now. I've experienced it. But
if the bag's the bag, you know, like if you're going to pay me a lot of money, yes, I'll record cheeks getting clapped. But I don't really want to sit there and be like, okay, I'm going to look back at my career. If someone says, show me a bit of work, I'd rather me show you a music video I've directed or my own music, which I'm doing, or my own content, which I've done for myself, or like I did work for Prostate Cancer UK. That was like a nice bit of work, which I was quite proud of. Work for like Ethan, just to see like the channel progression growth from before I started working with him to the last video I did for him. I've started doing Faith's content recently. So that video did really well. Like I can't take too much credit for that, but I do take some sort of credit because I like manage a production. She wants me to do all of her production, but the video's up for like 2 days. It's nearly on 1 million views.
I saw it in my recommended. Yeah.
It's done really well. Like the CTR's okay. It's on like 9%. So it's actually like lower than average. But I think because the outreach was so big, the CTR is going to be naturally lower. But I've worked on videos where we did one for Astrid where the CTR was like 50%. And I've never seen a CTR that high before, but that video did really well for Astrid too. So
yeah, the click-through rate is one that I could never really get down with the content I was making, Rocket League content, because I was like, well, the more it pushes it out, the more it's going to push it out to people who don't care about Rocket League, and then it's just going to bring it down. So it's like that horrible opposite effect of the more it pushes it out, the worse the thing that makes it get pushed out more gets.
It's a never-ending cycle when it comes to like optimization of SEO for YouTube. And it's something where you can look into it. And Cam, who I live with, Cam Kirkham, he is like analytic god. Like this guy just loves just looking at stuff. I'm not the same way, but I read a lot about about what's going on and where we're moving, and where like YouTube's trying to push content. But then like looking at your own YouTube studio and your analytics, and I've got something called vidIQ, which is brilliant too. So it helps me with optimizing my SEO. Just simple stuff. Make sure that your title is relevant to a topic, which is like whether trending or whether it's a niche or whether it's something where you think people are going to be watching. Your thumbnail, is it engaging enough? Have you got various options? Can you try an A or B? Can you try an A, B, C or D? Can you try it like different ways? If your CTR is slacking, change the title, change the thumbnail. Does that change anything? Keep looking at the analytics, see if anything new. Sorry.
My goodness.
Yeah, my God. Cut that. keep changing, keep looking at how things change in the algorithms. Simple tags, just they're not that important, but it's the small things. So can the tags help?
Yeah, so if you do everything, it's the classic like 1% thing, isn't it? Everything helps by 1%, and if you do all of them at the same time, then puts you in the best space to succeed. Mm-hmm. I mean, the analysis of the analytics is something that I feel just comes with experience, as is a lot of the stuff you've described with your video production, content production. Mm-hmm. You almost have to fail every way possible to then learn what the right way to do things is. So that's, I do want to go back, because we've spoken about your content journey, but I want to go back to Charlie on the journey to being a content producer. You mentioned about the audio being your focus. You went off to uni, studied that, you're into your music. You do a lot with music, audio technician, right? You work in a studio, right? Or have done?
I have done. Yeah. Music fun.
Yeah, music like fun.
Music fun.
So was that the route you thought you were going to go down growing up as young Charlie?
Yeah, so I have a picture of me. I used to love the 975. I still do. Favorite band of all time. But they were like a massive inspiration for me growing up. And I don't know, like, I've lived quite a few lives. It's always been, I've done many different weird things, like doing martial arts. I thought from the age of like 13 to 17, when I was just training 6 days a week for that, I was going to China, I was competing, I was doing my nationals and stuff like that. That's what I thought I was going to do. I was like, okay, me and my little bald head, I was like, I'm going to become a martial artist. I want to become an actor, do like the martial arts movies and stuff like that. That went to... No one tits up, but then I'd also had the back burner from being a like from a child. I'd like playing the bass, so just music. So I was like, I actually also want to be in a band, kind of thing, like in the background. Like if I didn't do martial arts, I'd probably be better on the bass because I would put the hours into music. But I didn't. My focus was on martial arts, and then it was music. And then at the age of like 16, I got into the 975. 17, I got a lot more into my music in general. Stopped doing martial arts at 17. And then it was like, okay, you know what? I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing. So I haven't lived a hard life. Like I'm very, very, very blessed and privileged. My dad's very well off. I didn't grow up with my dad. I grew up with my mum. She's not well off, but my dad has a lot of money and he left before I was born. So my mum said like, I want you to send him to the school which you went to. So I was privately educated, very lucky. And even then, I don't even think private education is that good. It just gives you cool opportunities. And the performing arts, whether you want to do acting or whether you wanted to do like cadet force or whatever you wanted to do, like they could facilitate for that. That's kind of what you pay for. It's not the education. You pay for the opportunities, which I don't think is fair, but that's a completely different topic. But I was lucky. And music was one where I was like, okay, I want to go. But my teachers were like, you need to know what you want to do at uni. And I was like, I don't know what I want to do at uni. I was like, I haven't got a clue. I don't even know what I do every day. Like, I just wake up in the morning and I'm forced to go to school and I'm just here chilling. I just want to be happy and just vibe. That's not an option when you have to wear a suit to school every day. And they were like, you know, you can take a gap year, but we need to, after school, after your gap year, we need to know what you want to do. They're quite hands-on with that, which I guess is like, thank you for your 15 grand a year. Like, I appreciate that you care. But they were like, okay, you need to know what you want to do. So I went on a gap year. I was working at Roxy. That's where I started meeting the YouTubers and that. And then they were like, oh, if you want to pursue like music, we should look into different types of music courses. So I was like, yeah, fine. And they were like in contact with me after I left school. So I was like, okay, what would be a good like a music production or something like that? And then I found a uni called SAE where I did audio engineering, and I was like, okay, I guess I'll have a look. So I went traveling from November up to January, late October into January, and then when I came back I was like, okay, I'm going straight into uni. Went there, first 6 months brilliant, after that god awful. Yeah, the consoles weren't working, nothing was working, but my thought process was like, okay, I'm a bassist, I want to join a band, I guess, at some point in time. I can sing a little bit, so I can do backing vocals. But I want to be useful. So I will learn how to mix. I will learn how to do like the audio engineering aspect, because if you're just a bassist going into a band, someone will be like, yeah, just play those four notes, just play the roots if you want, or you can mix it up if you're actually a good bassist. But I was like, I kind of want to be like, I want to make some music. I want to be heads in there. So if I went in to a band, I'd be like, okay, production process, I can help with live sound. I can also do like part of the songwriting, and I can also help with how a mix is going to sound. That's what I wanted to do. Did it end up that way? No, because I hated the uni and it just killed my motivation for something which I was passionate about. So therefore I was like, okay, no. And then I came into the video aspect of it. I found something which I really loved doing because it wasn't constrained by education, and I could just learn without being kind of pigeonholed into a certain avenue. And then it had monetary value because they were paying me. So I wasn't getting paid for any music stuff. I was getting paid for the video. I get my own creative freedom with the video. I don't for the music. And there we go. Like, music was letting me down on that side. It wasn't the music, it was the uni, but the video kind of like was a lot more rewarding. But now it's kind of turtling around to the music again.
Yeah, I guess it's interesting what you described there was the doing something you're passionate about in a forceful education way. I think a lot of people get put off by that. I think the same thing happens when you start to work for a lot of people. For you, it turned out great, you know, working in the content space. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of people, once they start really grinding, that's when their mindset shifts towards, oh, I don't really want to do this anymore. And that's why we see so many content creators get to the top and then burn out, because it's not what they enjoy doing anymore, because they have to follow the structure that's needed to succeed. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's your advantage. You do so many different things. You mix it up constantly that you're never sort of just bashing out the same content over and over again that makes it feel repetitive. So when you're at private school, sorry to bring up private school again, it sounds like something you're not proud of. But with that whole period there, were you much of a gamer?
Oh, yes, actually. Yes and no. I was a gamer as a kid going into, I'd probably say going into like 14, 15, but then when martial arts kind of took over, I had a lot less time for games. But yeah, I used to slay a little bit of the games.
What kind of games were you playing?
So Halo 3 was like my jam. Loved that. COD 5, World at War, that was my jam as well. And those are like my two main like console games that I played, like until I started picking up games again in literally like a couple years ago, like a few years ago. But I think before then was World of Warcraft, and that shook me to the core. I was a night elf druid, and I was called Shadowclaw. Actually, I had a Draenei warrior called Chigley, and then I had Shadowclaw as my night elf druid, and I was a resto druid, and I was so bad, but it was great. But I played it so much on my laptop over summer that I'm pretty sure I melted my testicles. Like, they were squishy. I genuinely had to show my mum. I said, "Mum, my testicles are squishy." And she said, "All right, well, we're going to stop playing on the laptop. You're going to have a laptop holder on your thing."
Oh, did you have the little like fan laptop holder thing? Did you have one of those?
No, it was just something which could go over me.
Oh, I see.
Because I used to play with a pillow on the top, but when my testicles started to go squishy, instead of stopping it or putting it down, I played on my laptop. My posture must have been awful because I was just always on the sofa like this, just hunching over, just trying to pick up quests and stuff. It's dreadful, but I loved it.
Yeah, because I'd never really played on my lap, but when I did, I had this like ramped vent thing, which you can use on a desk as well. It's good for cooling and stuff. Mm-hmm. And there was a few times where I wouldn't use it. I was like, oh, I'll risk it this time. And it does heat up the old lap area.
I'm telling you, I did some serious damage to those gonads. Like, it was bad. Like, you know, when you feel like, I felt like they were mushy peas.
One way to describe them.
Oh, one way. I didn't know where I was going with it. Mushy peas came to mind.
We'll move swiftly on to the top five games. So we ask every guest this, what their top five games of all time is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for you, I'm interested because you are a gamer. You do play games, but you're not like someone who just plays every game possible. You're so busy all the time as well. And you describe when you were growing up, you did all sorts of other things.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested to know what your top five games are.
Okay. Ooh. Okay, I'm gonna hit you with Halo 3.
Good shout.
That's got to be probably one of my favorite games of all time. But it's also, I'm gonna hit you some Rogue ones actually, because number one, I feel like not a lot of people are going to say these ones, but they're also just very different from like my experience of playing games. Halo 3, but I feel like if I played Halo 3 now, yeah, I'd go onto it and it would just be crap, because you get a nostalgia thing and it's like time is delusion with games, because you'll go on and play it and it'll be like, this isn't as good as what like I remember it, and it'll be rubbish. But Halo 3 was amazing. Like, it was so good. But I think the way that games have developed, we've become desensitized to it. Anyway, instead of
waffling, there are some games from history that even though they might not look as good, the mechanics are amazing. And those games have held well in time. Like, Halo 3 is one of those games where people really enjoyed the mechanics of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's other ones like Smash Brothers Melee. You know, that was, for its time, was incredible, but it's held up because of the mechanics. And like, we've discussed this on here, is how each game series, like Mario Kart, for example, typically Wii is the most popular one because it's one a lot of people played, but it's also the one with the best mechanics. Call of Duty, everyone loved Call of Duty 4 because of the mechanics and how it felt so much better. So there is an element of the way the game feels in the older games that that does make them stand the time.
Definitely. There's definitely that. I mean, COD for me is not going to make my list because I loved COD 5. I was never bothered about COD 4. And then after that, I just didn't care. Because then these bastards start flying around on like jetpacks and stuff. I'm like, bro, like that doesn't happen.
That's the new Modern Warfare stuff.
I don't care about any of that stuff. I was like, I liked World of War because like there was like some sort of, okay, they had Nazi zombies, which isn't historically accurate. But I mean, it was more historically like those guns existed, you know, like. And even though that the modern guns there, it doesn't sit right with me. The dolphin dive and all that kind of nonsense. I was like, okay, regardless, without me, there was just domination on World at War was sick. I enjoyed it.
Had a good campaign as well, which is rare for a shooter game.
Great campaign, but Halo campaign. Oh my gosh, that's a campaign and a half. Anyway, list Halo 3. Yeah, I'm gonna go for Mario Kart on the DS.
That's my favorite one as well.
Okay. I just remember going to on school trips when we take the thing and you just jump on the little Wi-Fi.
And because you didn't need everyone to have the game. Mm-hmm. Someone could just get it through the sharing system, so you could get everyone on it. I went on cricket tour and we had 8-person Mario Kart on the tour bus. My goodness, that was
carnage.
That was great. Carnage, it was almost better than everything else that happened on the tour.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we were all looking forward to the travel. Like, how far is the ground today? Oh, an hour. Perfect.
Three games, the three Grand Prix. It's brilliant. Like, I wish that there was. There's definitely like one thing with like some games is that there's skill gaps. But with Mario Kart, there is a skill gap, but it's a lot sweatier. Mm-hmm. I don't like that. Like I like you just naturally being able to progress and be better, whereas I think with Mario Kart, you have to know some little sneaky tricks, like tricks.
Yeah, Mario Kart DS was all about snaking, wasn't it? The old left-right spam.
And I can't do it anymore. Boost. Yeah, like I play that. If I play the DS, like, because you learn the mechanics for that. Whenever I play, people stream Mario Kart and stuff now on like the new, like the Switch and stuff. And like I've played it against Ben. Ben's good at the game. Like, I'm rubbish. Like, I've lost gaming ability for pretty much anything just because it's not my time. DS, Mario Kart. So Halo 3, Mario Kart. Strange one, Jak. Jak 3.
Not heard of that.
Jak. That's a...
What is it?
It was a game where... I don't even know what he is. But this is like another example of like... It's J-A-K, three, and he has like a little ferret and you just run around doing like these quests and stuff. But my whole love for like the game came with like playing that, and they had flying cars and you could just zip around on flying cars. That's the best I can give you, mate.
Ferret flying cars.
He looks like an elf.
Is there like collectibles, like coins and stuff?
Yeah, but it's more of like, it's like a mission based game. So it's like a storyline, and you're pretty much like it was so many years ago, and I picked up Jak 3 again to play it, and I was like, the graphics are awful. So this is not what I remembered. Like, I thought it was quite realistic, for like, very confusing. It threw me off. But
need a Jak 3 remastered for you, so you can have.
Need a Jak 3 remastered because that game slapped as a child. I was like, that's brilliant. Detroit Being Human.
Heard of that?
Brilliant game. Brilliant game. That's like a decision-based game.
Hmm.
And what would my fifth game be? Detroit Being Human is great because like every single game is like you play it and then your decisions affect the outcome.
I feel like those kind of games are really good for people who don't want to play them, but like watching streamers. Mm-hmm. Like if you've got a streamer who you like the personality of, watching mm-hmm. them play through those games.
Yeah.
I've got a few of my friends who they play those style of games and I will watch those streams mm-hmm. every single time they're live because I want to see how their story progresses.
Literally. That was one of my best performing streams is when mm-hmm. I was doing that. And also like I think with streaming, when I wanted to stream, that was it was hard for me when the Among Us time came because I didn't like how like the Twitch community kind of like changed around that because it became a little, there's politics, it's different. But for me on gaming and stuff, I like to just enjoy myself. I like playing Valorant, don't get me wrong. I can't stream Valorant because I can't be entertaining playing it. I can be entertaining playing like Detroit Being Human because it's like, I have to like kind of half perform and I'm like, I am engaging with the game. On Valorant, I'm sat here trying to figure out like where the heck I'm going and whether I can actually successfully team kill Ben. Like if I can do that in a round, that's brilliant. But that's the most entertaining you'll get because if I'm actually trying to win a game and I want to focus, it's competitive.
Yeah. That's the problem with all esports games, I feel like. Unless you're really good at them and you don't have to focus too hard on the game. Mm-hmm. And even then, people are really watching for your gameplay and not your personality as much.
Yeah.
It is tough.
I'm trying to think of my last one, bro.
Can't think of a fifth. You said World of Warcraft. You said Valorant. You said...
World of Warcraft would be a good one.
Said a few games there.
Yeah. You know what, actually? Space Invaders.
Might be our first Space Invaders and might be our last.
Yeah. On the Nokia, if you tell me, if next guest or someone just say, what do you think of Space Invaders? On the Nokia phone, during just child time, that's brilliant. What a game. I was going to say Dead by Daylight, but...
Nope, Space Invaders.
Space Invaders is actually probably number one or two.
What do you think of the graphics now if you go back to Space Invaders?
I never played Space Invaders for the graphics, it was for the storyline. The big boy like towards the end. Uh-huh. Yeah, you really want to crack on with those.
I never really got down with Space Invaders. I was more of a snake kind of guy. I loved just making the snake really long and planning ahead.
That sounded mad, but yeah, that's fine.
We can cut that clip in with you talking about Johnny Sins earlier. But so the last thing we ask every guest is what their greatest ever gaming achievement is. And it doesn't have to be, you know, like, oh, I completed this game. Oh, it could be a professional thing for some people. They talk about their achievements in professional gaming. Mm. I'm interested for you because I feel like you're not... You don't go into games. you don't go into games trying to achieve the highest possible achievement in a game. You go into it to just relax and have fun. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested to hear what you say for this.
Bloody hell. My greatest ever achievement. FIFA 1999 or 2000, I used to play on the PlayStation 1. I got 7 red cards in a game. Yeah, and then you forfeit the match and lose 6-0 or 3-0. I don't know what it is, but yeah.
Is that a thing? Was it slide tackles?
You can't play with less than 6 players. So I think I got 6 or 7 red cards.
How did you go? Were you trying to do this?
Yes.
How did you go about doing that?
I started
that?
With my goalkeeper. You could get a lot more control back those. I say FIFA didn't make my list because I love football. I play football. I'm a West Ham fan. I hate FIFA. It is crap. Like, it's so bad. Like, there's a skill level to it, but it's not realistic. If I'm playing football, I'd like to be able to play nice football. It's so bad. Why the heck is a right back? How can Aspilicueta run from right back and then score against me? It's not possible. It's just not possible. Anyway.
That's the red card.
Yeah, the real red card. That's the... Okay, that just jars me. I hate FIFA.
I'm with you. I hate FIFA too, but I also don't like football much.
I could not speak to you about football. But... red cards. I still hate FIFA. It's playing in my head. I've given myself a complex.
Did your hatred for FIFA trigger you going for the red cards? Was it like, I've had enough of this game?
No.
Change the goalposts.
No, because the old FIFA used to be great because you could do anything and it wasn't realistic. But I think my qualm with FIFA is that they try and make it look as realistic as possible and... It's not realistic because you've got players which can't do what they do. Even the best players in the world, you'll never see them doing what they can do on FIFA, which I think creates a toxic consumerism perspective for FIFA fans with how they perceive actual football players. Like, people are so hard on actual football players because they think that five-star skill Mbappe should actually be able to score a hat-trick in every single game. And, like, yes, he does in the World Cup final, but shouldn't actually do that every now and again. He's a freak of nature. Like, he's a beast, but not the same beast as what's on FIFA. It's unrealistic. Anyway, FIFA, the old days. I just hate FIFA, mate. Politics of FIFA. There's always politics. But with FIFA, the old one, it wasn't realistic. And I started with the goalkeeper, took the goalkeeper out to the end of the pitch. And I was like, I want to see if I can make my goalkeeper injure their goalkeeper. Did it. But you can't really do that now. It's just not fun.
They make them like they used to.
They don't make FIFA like they used to. It was so much better. If they create like a FIFA Street mode, like FIFA Street, great game.
What a game, yeah.
What a game.
I used to love that. I used to be a Nintendo gamer. Mm-hmm. And I remember us getting the FIFA where they allowed you to use Miis in the game. That was hilarious.
That's cool. I did not know.
There was like
that.
A version of it where it was like Mii football. But anyway. Red cards, 6 or 7 red cards, not confirmed or denied as to how many it was, but you remember getting a lot of red cards in a game of FIFA, having to forfeit the game.
Mm.
Great achievement.
Thanks.
Let's rewind and go back to you as a content producer again.
Okay.
And we're going to get a little bit deeper here because you mentioned a lot of stuff you do, and maybe some of the people were listening earlier and thinking, how does he fit it all in?
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you said around the deadline, some things come up and you just have to commit to them. And I can't think of anyone I know where the phrase work hard, play hard describes them better. You are very much a work hard, play hard kind of guy, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
What are the pros and cons of being a work hard, play hard kind of guy? Because it's definitely got you places, but it's affected you negatively too.
Yeah. I'm 26 now. And when I look at my career, it hasn't been a successful one, but it hasn't been unsuccessful. I'm very tough on myself. I have goals where I want to take my career and myself. So work hard, play hard. All right. I'm an extrovert. I like people. I hate people and I love people, you know? So I think if you have good people around you, which I do, you can get the most out of your social interactions. I don't use people. I am very good at reading people until it's women. Very bad at reading those. When it comes to seeing what someone's true intentions are, I can see when someone's like a user or that kind of situation. You know, when like, you're in like a social gathering, I don't like small talk. I try and keep my conversations as short as possible, unless it's a topical conversation. Like, I don't want it to be a meaningless conversation if I'm talking to you. That's just the way I am, you know. Play hard, go out, have a drink, just smoke a doob, just do whatever, just enjoy yourself, like have fun, have experiences. If I work throughout my whole of my 20s, and I look back and I think all I've done is work, I won't be happy. If I go out for the whole of my 20s and don't work, I'll have regrets. What's the happiest way I can make myself is work as hard as I possibly can, make sure that I achieve as many things as I possibly can, and go out and don't say no to opportunities. Like, if I'm tired, like, sometimes it is just not possible that I can make it out. Sometimes I'm on a shoot and I will miss these like social gatherings, but then I'll make up for it on another time, you know? And that's just like my personality with being like an extrovert. It's like, I enjoy those social interactions. If I was an introvert like my mum, then I'd be like, I'll just work and go home and I just want my time to sit on phone, scroll TikTok and just enjoy myself. And that makes her happy. And like going out and playing hard doesn't necessarily make you happy. I've had moments where I've overcooked it and I've gone out too much. I've had moments when I've worked too hard and I haven't been able to go out. And finding the balance is always the hardest thing. Balance is everything, and it's something I've always struggled with. It's a constant ongoing battle to make sure that where I'm working, I don't sacrifice personal time. Like, I remember there was a time when I didn't see my mum for probably about 6-7 months. So that's not right. So I literally live in the same city as my mum. Why have I not seen her? I speak to her all the time. I'll text, FaceTime me. But it's not the same. It's like actually spending time with your mum, with significant others, with your friends, people, like make time for them. I started making more time for friends over this last year, where like Joey.
Hopefully get him on the pod at some point.
Yeah, he'd definitely be down. Like Joey and I got really close over the last year. And when he was moving to Cardiff, we were both really gutted because we'd started to get a lot closer. For example, I was supposed to go on a date with a girl. She blew me off. She's a strange one, actually. It's a very bad judge of character, me, with women. But with Joey, I was like, bro, I got a date lined up. Do you just want to go on a date with me? He was like, yeah. So we've literally been on two dates with each other, mates dates. It was great. I had a lovely time. But I do the same. Some of my friends like Remy, Naeem, Ben, I'll go out and just, we'll just do something low-key. It doesn't have to be anything crazy. It's nothing for Instagram, nothing for stories, just spending quality time. And that's one thing I noticed, that I don't live a normal life. It's a very strange life. I work a lot, but it's also in a social media space and in an industry which is not socially normal. My working hours are every day, at any time. I'll be receiving work messages at 2 a.m., at 7 a.m., at 10 a.m. I'll go on my phone after the podcast and I've got work to do. Mm-hmm. You know, there'll be things which I need to do. I need to fit gym in as well, which you and I had a lot of conversation when we first started speaking about that. It's like fitness.
I was going to go on to that, actually, because that's something that I've seen through time we know each other. When I first met you, you were really into it and you're in pretty good shape. Mm-hmm. In fact, I remember we met in G's place, I think, in her lounge, and you just rocked up and you were so proud of your body. I think you got topless multiple times.
No, I'm a nudist. I'm just naked.
Yes. And I was very impressed by your six pack at the time.
Thanks.
And so I knew you as someone who cared a lot about fitness. Mm-hmm. And then throughout knowing you over the last few years, you've gone through these waves of really loving fitness. And then 6 months later, you'll do a post saying, I've not been able to go to the gym for the last 6 months because I've been so busy. Let's kick off again and start again. And you did that recently as well. So it's something you want to do. Mm-hmm. But why do you struggle to fit it in?
Balance, my friend. It's the same thing. Like, I'll work hard. I'll play hard. Just to go off to that point, it's the same thing. It's that finding the time to go to the gym whilst doing my work meetings, planning other things which I've got to do. Sometimes I forget because I've got so many things going on. Like, at the moment, I've got Astrid's content. I work for a company called Millhouse. Shout out those guys, they're brilliant. So they are the guys who I go to America with to work with Scuff for the CDL events. And then I do Niren's content sometimes. I organize stuff for him. I'm doing Faith's content, Ethan's content starting up. It's like other people that will come through and say we need bits and bobs here and there. I'll be doing that, but Astrid's stuff is a full-time thing pretty much. And then on top of Astrid's full-time, I've got the other bits of content which I'm managing.
And then there's all the little bits where you help friends out. Like I said, when you helped me out with this, you gave me advice around the tech, advice around how to do things, got me in contact with Hannah, who did the set for me. And you were involved in all those conversations, giving your input. We went for lunch. I think you even bought me the lunch, even though I was having your time. so you've always been quite a lot of a giver.
Yeah.
Do you feel like sometimes you give more than you should?
Yeah, I have my own personal battles when it comes to how I perceive a lot of things when it comes to content production. So, like, I want to have my own time to be able to do the gym stuff, the fitness things. Back on it again, but when I go to New Orleans in 3 weeks for work, am I going to have time to go out and continue? I'll have 3 weeks of progress, then will I regress again? But yeah, I feel like I support a lot of people, but don't receive a lot back. That's not an insecurity, it's an observation that I've had. But also, I'm not going to do like the victim card or the pity me card. It's more, okay, what I've produced clearly isn't good enough to receive that support. So when I'm doing my music now, I'm focusing on that. I should have 4 songs out this year. If I don't receive like friends supporting from that, then I'll just realize that the energy that I'm putting into people is misaligned, because I don't need people to support like a YouTube video. I don't need people to support something where, like, I don't even know, like an opportunity. Like, so frankly, like, I feel like, okay, people aren't supporting me, but realistically speaking, I haven't put myself in a position where I've actually asked for that support. So when I put my music out and I'll be like, guys, I've got my new song out, could you just whack it on your story? Could you stream it? Could you let me know what you think? That's then me asking.
Mm.
And I would do that for any of my friends. So if that's not reciprocated, then I realize, okay, you're either number one, not a friend, or you're just not supportive. And like, it is what it is. And I just got to realign my energy. If I'm not going to receive reciprocation of that, then I just don't need to put that energy in. Unfortunately, I usually do, because it's the thumbprint as well. It's like, if, say, for example, a content creator who is of a decent size says, oh, I need your help for this. And I can see, like, okay, you've got the budget, not for me, but like, you've got the budget to do, and I can help you achieve your vision. I'll do that. And then I'll see that go out. But then if they don't support me back, I'll be like, bit crap, but hey ho, I can see my thumbprint on your product, you know?
Because that's sort of what you did for me. Like, I didn't, at first we were going to potentially get you in to do the production for this, but then it was like, that's probably not logistically viable, because then you have to keep being here every single time.
Mm-hmm.
Organizationally, that would be tough.
Mm-hmm.
Payment wise, it would just be throwing a lot of money at you. And we've got a much better approach now with Harry here. Mm-hmm. But even through that process.
Fuck you, Harry.
Even through that process, you were just giving your time mm-hmm. for free. And I offered to pay you as a consultant because I was like, that's how this situation is going. You're giving me information, you give me knowledge, connecting with people. You weren't willing to take that money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that something maybe you struggle with receiving as well? Like, you're very happy to give
mm-hmm.
a lot of your time, a lot of your energy. I mean, even monetarily, you're willing to give. I've had nights out where you've said, oh, I think there was one time we were going to a place and you're like, oh no, I've got everyone tickets. And when they didn't give us all tickets, you went and took all the money out and paid for everyone's ticket. So there's things you do where you're willing to give without thinking, but then sometimes you struggle to take. Is that something you felt like maybe you need to learn how to receive?
Yes, Mr. Gregan. Yes. I would rather, like I said, money comes and goes. I don't really care about it until the tax man comes, then I really care about money. But okay, so I work with OnlyFans girls. If you earn $5,000 a month, it's a good wage. If you earn $100,000 a month, it's great money. If you earn $200,000 a month, fantastic. I've earned a lot of money in a month before. I've earned nothing in a month before too. I understand that as long as I can pay my bills, as long as I can afford a lifestyle which I want to do, I don't care about how much money I have. I'm blessed, I'm lucky, and it's a privilege that I have a family home in London, that when the day comes when my parents pass, I will have a house. I'm never going to be stressed in this life. And it's, people put too much pressure on themselves to be like, God, I've got to save, I've got to do this, I've got to do this. You're constraining yourself. But my mindset comes from a place of privilege. It's, I don't have to graft to make sure that I can afford that house. I have a financial advisor and I'm saving for a house in time, but that's going to be property investment. It's not my be all and end all. It's just it's a business asset. It's safeguarding myself for the future. But if you can have your business side, but you can have that. And yeah, okay, like going out and buying people the drinks and stuff and sorting out people's travel and doing things like that. Yes, it's annoying sometimes, but if I don't do it, who will? So really speaking, if everyone stood outside a club and the club's been difficult, I know how to get anyone, people in, so I'll just go and do it. Just go, just do it, just go have fun. Like, I'd rather just like look after people and just make sure that you're having fun and doing things like that. In regards to like consultancy, when you say about that, I'm not asking for money. I'm okay for money. If I was struggling a little bit, then I'd be like, okay, yeah, just hit a few bob here and there. But I'm okay. So I don't need the money. And if anything, it's like small businesses and stuff like that. So you've got a passion project and you've got something which you wanted to do. So instead of taking your money, I'd rather you invest that into your own stuff. You know, I don't want to sit there and be like, okay, well, thanks for your time. Cheers for the money. I'll be like, the way you pay me back is by putting your effort into the podcast and making sure that does well. You know, I'd rather you make it look as good as possible. So I'd be like, okay, I helped him with that. That's great. Rather than like, I did consulting for him for that, and as a result, he has expectations about that. You know, I'd rather, for me, yes, okay, I don't sit there and think, okay, I've received a lot more than I've given. I've definitely given a lot more to this life than received. But I also feel like it's, like I said, a place of privilege. Like, I'm in a position where I can give to people. So why would I take so much?
I guess you've looked at your privilege and gone, I've already received so much to start life off in this way I have
mm-hmm.
that I can now just spend the rest of my life giving to make up for that. I feel very similar in a lot of ways because I am similar to you in place of privilege and stuff like that. Mm. This is getting into one of those like two privileged white guys on a podcast.
Doing a podcast. Who would have thought it?
Yeah. But I guess we'll go on to, you mentioned about your hard work and everything mm-hmm. and how that's affects your ability to go to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something you particularly want to achieve that you just don't feel like you've got the time for right now that maybe your hard working lifestyle has limited you from doing?
Yeah, my own social media, 100%. The same way as doing audio engineering to learn how to do video, I wanted to learn how to be behind the camera so that I could be good in front of it. And I'm good in front of camera. I can do my thing when I do my own videos. But it's finding the time to invest into my own content. I've got a sheet of video ideas where I've got great ideas to do things. All right, so there's a guy, you might have seen some of his videos, called Diego. He's got long hair. He's like this Riz God, whatever, does some stuff. Absolute dickweed, but I love him. Like, he's great. Like, as in, like, I look at that content, I'll be like, how are girls falling for this? Like, it's ridiculous. But he's doing well. Like, he's got charm and he's a good-looking guy. So I don't mean dickweed in a bad way. It's just more of like, oh, my God, bro. But the content does great. So I said to him, I was like, I want to do a video with you. I don't know when I'm going to have this time. I want to do a video with you where you teach me how to talk to girls. Like, I don't have any problems, but I was like, it'll be funny. Like, and I want you to teach me how to riz. And then I will apply your methods to women, so we'll go on dates. So I basically want to use that to showcase his ability, so we'll have like us talking in a setting where he'll talk about things and we'll just make it funny, where he'll say something, I'll say it completely wrong, and then basically I want him to sit down, have a date with girls and do his like rizzing stuff or whatever with these girls and just watch them just like crumble, whatever, do their thing, and then I want to sit down with them and just completely cock it up, like just completely like spin the wheel, just go straight in, like not the way I'd actually talk to people, but just be a fool about it. And he was like, I love it. Like, it'll be great. And I sit there and think, I can make that a good video for long format, but then also the short format content, I can even see it now just about clipping from one moment to the next about how he speaks to them, get their reaction, then how I speak to them, and then his reaction to what I've just said. And then the short format content is gold. Like, mm-hmm. you can create some really good content. And it's, I guess,
also with the short form content, with that is the out of context nature of it will really rile people up as well, because that's one thing we've noticed with this podcast is you'll do a short form thing and it will be out of context, it'll be like 20-second clip. I mean, we're gonna have stuff from you talking about Johnny Sins, probably.
Brilliant.
But then someone will listen to that and they'll be like, oh, there's no way that happened, or that's a load of rubbish, they haven't backed up those facts, or oh, they could have done this instead of this. You watch it in the long form and it all fits into place, makes sense. But I feel like short form right now, it's all about like deliberately tricking people out of context. And that kind of style of video is perfect for that.
Mm-hmm. Working with Astrid's been a very interesting one, because her manager is very much so someone who's like, no publicity is, no press is bad press, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the complete opposite for me personally. I'm working on her brandability. So we clash a lot, because I say she can't do this because we need to build up her brand. Astra's hated, like she's hated by like the community, but she's actually a lovely girl. So how are we going to change that is by creating content which people can then see. We did the boxing series where people loved, and then the documentary which people enjoyed, and then I'm trying to make sure that her main channel, as we slowly grow that, and it's a slow burner, people start to buy into her as a content creator rather than the person who dances with people who it could be perceived that she is like capitalizing off their like mental illness or something, because none of the people that she was collaborating with are of right mind, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, and I said, like, these guys like seem that they could be nice or not nice out of the scene, like off camera, but the way that you're being perceived is that you are jumping on their views just to capitalize on it. And they're like, well, yeah, we are, but they're also gaining from us. And I was like, yes, they are. Like, they are gaining from you. That's why they want to collaborate with you. But they don't lose, because they're just getting your viewers to go over to them, whereas you lose because it looks like you're taking from them, which is all about, like, when I said brandability, so no press is bad press. Brandability, no press is bad press. Which way do you go?
Yeah.
And it's about finding
the common
ground.
Isn't it? Yeah.
So hard, bro. So hard. But that's also part of my job. So
And it's also, it's hard to envision that because you make one wrong decision,
mm-hmm.
see it go out there and everyone's opinion of it is different to what you expect.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's sort of where you got to have that vision for the game.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to ask you about your coming year.
My coming year?
Because I'm just going to read the tweet.
Okay.
And I want to understand why.
Okay.
I'm so convinced this year is mine. It's going to be the best year of my life.
Oh, it's so cringe. That is so cringe.
You said that.
What time did I tweet that?
I can have a look.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was your tweet. What does that mean? Why do you think that's the case?
Serotonin must have been really up.
that was 10:47. That was a morning.
What? I woke up and chose bliss for that day. Oh my goodness.
What a day.
And what a day.
8th of January, 2023.
Yeah. Because so far it's been brilliant. My work's going really well. I had a good job last year and I was let down really badly on a business decision. It was bad. They completely violated me, basically. We're now okay, but they know that they kind of messed up. I've had the conversations with them since. But that was like a big lesson to be learned. And then I couldn't afford rent for 2 months of last year. My mum helped me. It's also like exactly like where I say, like, I'm privileged, you know? And then work came through from December and then set me up for January. And then January, like I said, like, I've been working really hard. I worked so hard for the first 6 months of last year and I got completely cucked in a business deal. And then this year I'm working just as hard, if not harder, on other things, and I'm on a contract, so I can't be done dirty like that. I'm going to America, I'm doing work, I'm working on my music, I'm trying to get myself into a position where I'm going to be working on my own socials, self-investing. I've got a financial advisor who's helping me actually sort my money out, because otherwise I'll just buy everyone drinks, you know. Getting my personal life sorted. I don't have time for relationships, so dating's kind of like, I'm just back burner. I'll talk to people and stuff, but it's not a focus for me. Before, I'd prioritize women over like my own sanity. Don't get me wrong, you know me, I love women, but it's like I just can't facilitate for that. And it's also self-development. I've put a lot more time into thinking about myself and what I'm doing, personal growth. And I can see the difference of myself now to like, even from when I used to live with Ethan. So like I'm a completely different person. I've gone through loads of different things since then. But from when I used to live with Ethan, the man that I am now compared to then, I'd be proud of myself like then, you know? But even then now, I look at what I need to work on. It's a constant progression. Like, life is a journey, life's a lesson. But I was sitting there thinking, if you don't sort yourself out going into January, child, like, you're 26, you're going to be 30 before you know it. You don't know. And like, once you're 30, if you're not financially like completely solid, sound and stable by 30, then you would have failed. And that's also not like, if anyone's listened to that, if you are 30 and you're not in that position, then you, your own timeline is, for me, where I set myself like a deadline. I was like, okay, by 30, I want to be in a position where I could buy a house, like not just like a property investment, like an actual house. Like, I'll buy one which I want to live in.
Mm.
I want my company to be up and running. So I've started working on my foundations of laying like different editors and stuff, and videographers, photographers, graphic effects. And I have like my own Discord server where like I keep all my business stuff in there, so my different clients come in.
Just travel, sort of maturing for work. Your work process has made you feel a little bit more confident with the year then.
Organization, it's financial freedom as well. Like, the more money I have is the happier I am to a level, because I can do what I want to do. I can look after my friends. I can look after my mum. I had positions like where I couldn't do anything for my mum. When I was 18, I was working at Roxy, and I saved up loads of money and I sent her to Thailand to go on holiday. And then to meet me out in Thailand, I got a hotel and stuff to get out there. And I was proud of myself when I did that. I was like, that's great. And then from 19, 20, 21, I was a bum. I had my ex-girlfriend, my first girlfriend, and she'd be going out to work and stuff. I'd be laying in bed trying to find out work. Or I don't know what the heck I was doing, mate. Like, it was shambles. But I've been at every stage of my life where I work really hard or I haven't worked at all. But I think because now I work really hard, it's because I knew how much I was slacking back then. I could be a YouTuber now. I could have used my assets and the ability to be able to create content when I was so involved in the Sidemen space with all the boys that are in around there and the girls. But I let my relationship get in the way. I let my own work ethic get in the way. And then I lost that opportunity to, when I was new to the scene, to just jump headfirst into it. I'm not regretful because I've picked up great assets and work, and I'm here because of what I've done. And I've learned different ways, but I don't know, man, like this year is the best year so far because I'm traveling for work. I love travel. My money is up. My friends are great and my family are great too. So I've got no reason to complain. Like, I'm happy. For the first time, I've been happy for like a while. The back end of last year was quite dark. The beginning of last year was great. So it's about just like learning. Why was the beginning of last year so great? It's because I was earning my money. I was working hard. I was keeping busy. Now I'm earning money, keeping harder, and I'm financially secure because I've got my contracts in place and work keeps coming. So just got to keep grinding. If you stop grinding and you give up on that stuff. Last year, bro, I nearly quit. I nearly quit videography, everything, because that business deal did me so dirty. I was like, I'm just not good at what I do. I doubted myself completely. Whereas I switched it around. I was like, no, I need to stay true to like my calling, which I do believe is like what I do. And then I persevered and it's paying off. Like, everything's just going good. But like, that was a weak point where I was just like, I actually doubted myself, and I never doubt myself. And I did doubt myself. So I do obviously doubt myself, but that period of time I was like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say thank you for that, because I think I'm in the spot that you were last year right now, because I've been a bit, I don't want to say done dirty by esports, but I've been hit a few times by decisions that I felt weren't right. But then equally, we're in a position where we work in a volatile industry.
Yeah.
So it can happen. And so hopefully within the next few months, I'll be reaching where you are now and feeling the comfort of the stability and everything. So
I mean, it's your own journey, bro. Like, I didn't know that, so I'm sorry that that's happening. But the best advice that I would give to you there as a friend is literally straight away. It's that it's not permanent, and everything comes and goes. You know, same thing as money. But your journey, where you go, and I don't mean this in a condescending way. This is just because I've been here. You can sit there and think, "Crap, what is happening? I don't actually know what's next." And then you get a text from one person and that just changes everything straight away. And the more you manifest that energy, that is going to happen. Like, you are going to get another opportunity. You're good at what you do. So the fact is, you need to believe that you're good at what you do. I know you're good at what you do. I've seen it. But you just need to just stick true to the fact that, like, if this is what you're passionate about, the opportunity will come. And when it comes, you just dig your claws in it. And I was like, I'm going to go with it. But then keep your options open. Keep an eye out for the next opportunity. Because if someone's going to do you dirty, then like, you also need to understand, it's like, no one's going to be loyal to you unless you've got that contract in place. Legalities are everything. So as soon as you understand, I'm good at this, I believe in myself, I've got my source, I'm going to do this. Second that opportunity comes, you take it and you roll with it and you go.
Yeah, yeah. I think the key is, when things aren't going well, to continue grinding towards something, even if it's just developing. So like this podcast, for example, just off the back of this, in theory, I will get better at interviewing. In theory, I'll get better on camera. Mm-hmm. In theory, I'll learn from everyone who comes on. So yeah, that whole idea of just keep working hard, even when you're in your bad times, and we'll see where it all goes. But Charlie, I think that's all we've got time for.
It's all right.
I appreciate all the stories you shared and all the information. A different podcast, because you work behind the scenes on video production. And I think it's really interesting. I've learned a lot from you, hence what I described with the stuff I learned here. And I'm actually going to be picking your brains a little bit off the back of this, because I have some ideas around content in person, like stuff you've done like at TwitchCon when you were there. You've done so many things behind the scenes, lots of stuff you've done that people don't even realize you've done. So if you haven't seen Charlie's work before, you probably didn't realize it. And you've probably seen loads of stuff Charlie's been involved in.
Thumbprint.
Yeah, a little thumbprint everywhere. Yeah. I guess the final question we ask everyone, what does gaming mean to you?
Stress. Stress. I used to think it was just fun, but now it just stresses me out. Stress. Gaming is stress.
You're the only person who said a negative thing about gaming. Everyone else has been like, it's an escape. It's an amazing... Shut up.
It's stress. Everyone knows it's stress. It's great. It's toxic, but I mean, it's just stress. It's a good stress.
A good stress.
A good stress.
Thanks, Charlie.
No worries. Thank you for having me. Sports Social Podcast Network.